You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Kusha Navidar in for Allison Stewart. We continue with today's producer picks, where All of It producers come present some of their favorite segments with the latest album from singer-songwriter Corinne Bailey Rae. Here's producer Simon Close to tell us more.
Corinne Bailey Rae's debut solo album and its songs Like a Star and Put Your Records On were the soundtrack to family car rides in middle school for me. I've loved her music for almost 2 decades now, but I didn't follow her more recent releases as closely. Then she announced a new album in 2023 with the lead single New York Transit Queen, and it was like I was hearing a whole new Corinne Bailey Rae.
New York Transit Queen, New York Transit Queen, New York Transit Queen, little over 17.
The punk sound on this song signaled a totally different direction for Bailey Rae, which she followed through on her most recent album, titled Black Rainbows, mixing it with electronic, jazz, rock, and other influences. But the writing on this album was as much about making art as it was about researching history. A large part of Bailey Rae's process involved visiting the Stony Island Arts Bank in Chicago, an archive dedicated to Black heritage and artifacts. That song we just heard, New York Transit Queen, was inspired by a real photo she came across of Audrey Smaltz, a 1950s winner of the, quote, Miss New York Transit pageant. The music site NME called Black Rainbows 2023's, quote, biggest musical curveball. It was also just one of my favorite albums of the year. Corinne Bailey Rae joined guest host David First for a listening party last year. Here's their conversation.
I make a button of all my walls and throw it down.
So Black Rainbows is your fourth album. It explores some really new sonic territory for you, especially for fans of your earlier songs like Put Your Records On. It was inspired by time spent at the Stony Island Arts Bank in Chicago. This is a combination community center, art gallery, and library dedicated to Black history, located in an old savings and loan bank built exactly 100 years ago. Tell us about this place and how it served as inspiration for you.
I first found out about the Stony Island Arts Bank when I came across a photograph of this artist, a visual artist, this Black man staring out of this photograph, surrounded by his contemporary art, which was so puzzling to me. So he had this expression of kind of self-confidence, and he had this beautiful, relaxed expression. Around him was his art, a pile of bricks on the floor, a goat on these spindly legs going round on a train, circular train track, and then a picture of from a chicken shop, Harold's Chicken from Chicago, you know, so a man chasing a chicken with a meat cleaver. And he was staring at this photograph. He's represented by White Cube, a really prestigious contemporary art gallery in London. And he was staring out, sort of saying, this is my art, you know, this is me. And I thought, who is this man? Who is this Black man presenting this contemporary art? You know, he's not a painter. He's not a... And I found out he was called Theaster Gates. And I found out part of his practice is saving these buildings from demolition. He works in the south side of Chicago, which is an area, as you know, that has its challenges. And there's, you know, large unemployment and poverty. There's mental health problems. There's gun violence. And here is this artist who's investing and involved in rebuilding community. Mm. And he found this, he has walked past regularly this bank. It's a beautiful Gothic bank and it was going to be torn down. The city wanted to tear it down. He bought it for a couple of dollars from the city. He raised millions of dollars by selling his own art to transform the bank, to reclaim it and make it into an art space. And it's full of archive, all these different important historic archives. It has all the records from Frankie Knuckles' record collection, massive Chicago house DJ. It has all the books that were ever submitted to the Johnson family, who established Ebony Magazine and Jet Magazine and Negro Digest. So anyone who was writing about any kind of black stuff at all, you know, they would send their books to the magazine in hope to get reviewed. So there's thousands and thousands and thousands of books about everything from dance, mask, drawing, architecture, film, recipes, yearbooks. And then it has a collection of these problematic objects from America's past. They've been dubbed Negrobelia, but they are, you know, postcards with derogatory images. They're photographs, troubling photographs, lynching photographs. They're kind of black knickknacks, I guess, that this banker called Edward Williams, he would go around to yard sales and he'd go around to flea markets and see these objects hanging around and think, let me just buy those and take them out of circulation, you know, in the 50s and 60s and 70s. You know, who wants to buy the cookie jar shaped like a mammy or the these grotesque cartoons? Or they might be newspaper articles from the Civil War. They might be print adverts from the 50s. And he would buy them to take them out of circulation.
This is quite an interesting collection you're describing here. This must feel very different than a lot of the other museum spaces that you've encountered in your life.
Absolutely. And they're pieces that in a way were never meant to be in a museum. They're just, most of them ephemeral. Obviously, some of them are newspaper articles. Some of them are print adverts, you know, adverts for chocolate and adverts for things that clean your home. But they're all specifically orientated around black people, cartoons. You know, black people in service, children.
How did all of that serve as your fuel?
Well, when I walked into the bank, I was just amazed. The building is huge. It's this Gothic bank. You go in into the open space, then you look up into the double height library where the books are arranged on these beautiful thick wooden shelves, and then you go up into this collection where the objects aren't on show because they're mostly, they're quite painful and troubling objects. So you have to look, you look in a drawer, you unwrap a parcel and, you know, you undo the tissue paper here, or you find a song that was written, a lullaby that was written in slavery times, or all of these things, they're precious. I feel like they are objects that were made for, in many cases, amusement, white amusement, but they've been brought into this black care. So they're having this new life. In some cases, when you see them all together, you think, do we really need these objects around? They're so troubling. Shouldn't they just be on a big bonfire somewhere? But of course, they're evidence of a kind of thinking. And I think they're evidence of how widespread that thinking was.
Well, this new album is called Black Rainbows. That is also the title of the second track. Where did the idea of black rainbows come from?
I really liked rainbow as an image. I liked the way that it's spectral. You know, light hits a prism and it bounces off into all its many colours. And that's what I found in the library. I found all these different themes and all these different types of black thinking through the years. You know, instead of thinking of blackness as a kind of homogenous, that one single voice, there were all these different voices, all these different stories, all these different lost or forgotten or erased or hidden stories that I wanted to bring forward. And also the rainbow is significant because I really wanted to approach it with all these wide musical styles. I wanted to not have anything in the way so I would be able to bounce off these objects and just see what came. You know, originally it started as a side project. I thought, I'm going to call it Black Rainbows. It's not going to be under my name. It won't have my name on the packaging. And whoever finds this weird thing.
This found object.
Yeah, a found object about found objects.
Right.
You know, whoever finds it, that's great to them. Yeah.
And there is an incredibly wide mix of music and approaches in this collection. Let's hear a little bit of the song we were just talking about. This is Black Rainbows. Now this track, Black Rainbows, this one's almost more of a collage, right, than a straightforward song.
Absolutely. I think collage is a good metaphor for the whole record, really. There are so many parts of the record that there's light and there's dark. You know, there are painful things and difficult things and joyous things and resistance and resilience and ebullience and fun and humour. And I wanted to capture that, you know, when I was looking at all these objects. There's so many moments where I thought about the 60s and 70s era in black music. Bands like Parliament and P-Funk and Funkadelic, you know, Earth, Wind and Fire in the 70s, or Sun Ra much earlier than that, of artists who are saying, we are in these particular social conditions, but there's so much more. There's nature, there's the cosmos, there's the eternal, there's the transcendent, there's the playful, you know, building a mothership and sending it on tour, or Earth, Wind and Fire spending so much on their outfits that they, you know, they barely broke even. This kind of looking back to a particular version of Africa, kind of almost imagined Africa as this lush and brilliant place, and also looking to the future and saying, although we're here in these difficult conditions, we're part of something that is eternal and joyful and playful, and we really want to celebrate that. So I think that balance, that kind of, I wouldn't describe it as escape, but more a kind of a new headspace, consciousness. Was
absolutely.
What I wanted to
bring in. I mean, this is a song to me that really introduces, tells the listener that we're in a new world now, right? And this is introducing a lot of sounds that are going to be featured on the album.
Absolutely. I really wanted to explore all that. You know, I'm so interested in electronics and wild saxophone playing and drum machines. And, you know, mostly, I guess, with my previous records, I've sat down and played songs on acoustic guitar. And that's how some of these songs did start. But there's also so many more colors to play with, you know, and I wanted to do that.
So many more colors to play with. Let's hear one of them right now. I want to play the single New York Transit Queen, since we're at WNYC.
Absolutely.
First of all, where did this song come from? Who is the New York Transit Queen?
The New York Transit Queen is Audrey Smaltz, who I found when I opened a copy of Ebony magazine from 1954 and saw this woman, this 17-year-old woman, in a bathing suit, hanging off the back of this fire truck with fireman's boots on, with this playful smile on her face. And I thought, who is she? Who is this young black woman? And I found out that she'd won Miss New York Transit and found out about this beauty competition. It was an answer to Miss Subways, which was a widely celebrated competition, you know, to find a beauty queen every year in the subway. But it wasn't at that time open to black women. So the transit workers of New York, the black transit workers, got together and they made their own competition. And it was Miss Transit. So I saw a photo of all these four winners, these beautiful black women, you know, all the crowns on. And Audrey Smaltz, I just thought, she has this look. She looks like a regular hellraiser. You know, I got to meet her. She's born and raised in Harlem. She's in her 80s now. I interviewed her at the Schoenberg Museum, and I said, do you still live in Harlem? She said, honey, I was born, raised, buttered, jellied, and jammed in Harlem. You know, she's just amazing.
Well, can we hear a little bit of her musical?
Yes, so this is the song that came out for her. It came out as a punk song because it reminded me of those 90s posters, you know, that would use 50s images and subvert it.
This is a little bit of New York Transit Queen.
New York Transit Queen, New York Transit Queen, New York Transit Queen, little over 17. Transit Queen, New York, Transit Queen, New York, Transit Queen, little over 17.
I mean, songs like New York Transit Queen, this requires a totally different part of your voice from something like some of your former acoustic R&B songs, right?
Absolutely. And it really reminds me of my indie band. You know, before I had my first record out, I was in this indie band called Helen, and we were very big in our very quite small town of Leeds in England. But I used to love that. I loved being able to, you know, shout and wail and jump around the stage and play electric guitar. You know, I always say to people, I got into Billie Holiday and Kurt Cobain at exactly the same time. And to me, there's so much similarity in their voices and styles of music. It's so conversational and direct and storytelling. So, yeah, in this song, I guess I'm going a little bit back to my punk roots.
Now, for many people who are know you may perhaps from your debut that was more of an acoustic R&B singer-songwriter vibe. This is a very different sound, right? How much are you thinking about audience expectation when you're writing and creating this music or heading into the studio?
Well, when I first started making this project, I didn't think of it as my own record. I thought of it as a side project. But there are songs that are more coming from acoustic and soulful kind of origin, you know, some jazz, things that are closer to jazz ballads on the record as well. And I really wanted to show my rainbow, you know, show my diversity. But in many cases, I would have to respond to the particular feeling. You know, when I wrote a song called Put It Down, you know, that came from being at this amazing event in the Arts Bank where people came in, they would write down their woes on a piece of paper and then fold them up and put them in this big vessel that Theaster had made, this big clay vessel. And then we would all dance to this DJ, Dwayne Powell, who's playing the Frankie Knuckles archive, you know, he's playing house music. So we were dancing for hours, you know, 4 hours of solid dancing. And then at the end of the night, these woes are set on fire. And I really felt at that event that the thing that I was carrying, you know, I could put my burden down and it went away. So that track came out as, you know, it says too much inside, I got to dance it out. You know, that kind came out in a more sort of banging style. But there are other songs that, you know, started with my acoustic and ended that way as well.
That was David First's conversation on All of It with Corinne Bailey-Ray about her latest album, Black Rainbows. Up next, we dig deep into the first number one album by a solo female rapper. For our series, Silver Liner Notes, we discuss the miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Stay with us.